6 minutes past 11, Alive 90.5 Spotlight with Jim and Darren.
We often, as Darren and I've always said, listeners, feel privileged with the people that we have in our studios. We select them and we ask them to come in and tell their story. And our next guest is an amazing person who has a story that really is about other people, who has such a caring attitude and a real care for people. And I'd really like to welcome to the studio, on behalf of Darren and myself, Dr. Philip Lee, who really is an advocate for palliative care. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning, Jim. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, thank you for being with us, because the topic is a sensitive topic. It's a very real topic. And it's one that you have given your life to in terms of the importance of keeping people alive as a doctor, and now in this part of the journey, helping people through that part at the other end through difficult times. And from reading the background notes, it's a very challenging time for you, and yet you still have a real leadership in trying to solve this very, you know, difficult situation for lay people. How did you get involved with palliative care, Philip, if I can call you Philip, please?
Yep, sure, Jim. For the first half of my career, I was a GP in Western Sydney, initially in Wentworthville and then in North Mead and Winston Hills. And in the mid-1980s, when I was in Wentworthville, I was asked to see a lady at home who was dying from a skin cancer that was involving her face. And when I went and met her, she was the most delightful lady, being cared for by her daughter. And she was clearly nearing the end and wanted to stay at home. I thought she should go to hospital, but she wanted to stay at home and die at home. And in the mid-1980s, palliative care basically didn't exist. And so I had no training in that area. And so I did the best that I could to try and manage her pain, manage her anguish, and make sure she died with dignity. And over a two-week period, I'd go and see her before surgery. I'd go and see her at lunchtime. I'd see her on the way home, give her some medication and hope that she was comfortable. And she gradually deteriorated and passed away. And when I reflected on it, I really thought that I didn't do a good job. I really thought that she remained in pain, she was distressed, and I thought that I could do a whole lot better. What really changed things was when I received a letter and a small gift from her daughter thanking me for what she thought was wonderful care. And I just reflected and thought, well, if she thought that was good, we can do a whole lot better than this. And so I contacted the team at Westmead, who were just starting with their palliative care, to see if I could come and attend their unit to learn about providing palliative care for my patients in general practice. And from that experience, I just gradually drifted sideways into palliative care.
Define what palliative care is. We talk about the term or the concept or that, but what is palliative care? In your mind, when you're talking to a patient, let's say me, you're going to say, Jim, you need to go to palliative care. What are you saying to me?
That's a really important question, Jim, because I think in the community there's still a lot of misunderstanding about palliative care. People equate that with dying and find it really, really confronting.
Well, I do. As a non-medical person, I do. Yep,
and that's really important. And palliative care focuses on patients who have been diagnosed with a life-limiting illness, but it doesn't mean it's end-of-life care at that point.
Okay.
What we're trying to focus on is what is important to the patient. And it might be their physical symptoms, their pain, their nausea, their vomiting. It may be that they want to be cared for at home. They may want to take a trip. There's a whole range of things. And if you don't ask the question, what's important to you? What do you understand about your illness? You can't start to meet those needs. So you could really separate palliative care into two aspects. The first one, which is probably the biggest one, is that quality of life issue of allowing patients to live whatever time they have left in the best possible circumstances where they want to be cared for. The end-of-life phase is really looking at the last maybe weeks to months and making sure that the patient and the family understand where they are in that journey, but once again meeting their needs at that time. So there's two aspects to it. It's not just end-of-life care, that's a critical part, but it's the journey through that time.
Are you able to share with us and our listeners, Phil, the different types of palliative care? You've described a few just there, but I'm quite sure that there might be some other types that you've come through across your career and that we'll talk more about this morning.
Yes, well, the types of palliative, one of the things that happened at in Western Sydney was we actually changed the name of the service from the palliative care service to the supportive and palliative care service. So we support patients through their journey. So we may be first introduced to a patient while they're having very active treatment, maybe having renal dialysis, maybe having treatment for their cancer, maybe having surgery, but they have issues that's affecting their quality of life. So we help them through that supportive care phase. Where the palliative care is provided really depends on where the patient is. So we may meet them initially in the hospital as an inpatient. They may be referred to the outpatient department. We see them there. We may visit them at home and see them in their home, in their aged care facility. They may be admitted to one of the wonderful palliative care units we have in Western Sydney, such as Mount Druitt Hospital or St Joseph's Hospital at Auburn, or it may be that they are admitted to Westmead Hospital for a much more complex condition.
So talking about Westmead, what is the state of palliative care at Westmead across the time that you've been there and even now? And what do we need to do?
Right. Look, so going right back to the 1980s, Westmead Hospital was the first teaching hospital, tertiary referral hospital in the country to have a palliative care unit. It had an 8-bed dedicated palliative care unit staffed by specialist palliative care nurses. And that was really the envy of the teaching hospitals throughout the country. And that unit existed right through up until 2009, where the beds were quarantined for palliative care. Only palliative care patients were admitted. And we had an amazing specialised nursing staff of over 10 nurses who all they did was look after palliative care patients, plus the allied health, the spiritual side, the pastoral care, the social workers. And in 2009, the hospital executive decided to move those 8 dedicated beds to the cancer ward. And there was no longer a unique ward environment that was appropriate for caring for palliative care patients. And since that time, since the move, even though the cancer ward has been refurbished, the ward has ceased to exist approximately 2 years ago because the beds were no longer quarantined. So that as a palliative care physician, you may come into work in the morning and find you have a surgical patient or a cardiology patient or a trauma patient in a palliative care bed. And so the ward ceased to exist. The staff is still there in terms of the medical staff, but we have lost almost all the amazingly specialised nursing staff. So if a palliative care patient is admitted to Westmead Hospital, they might be in the oncology ward, they may be scattered through the hospital, and almost certainly they will not be cared for by a specialist palliative care nurse.
It's 14 minutes past 11, you're live 90.5 Spotlight with Jim and Darren, and we're talking with Dr. Philip Lee all about palliative care, and especially at Westmead. We're going to have a short break, and I know you've selected a song. Do you want to share that with the listeners?
Mark Knopfler's always been one of my favourite musicians, and the movie Local Hero was wonderful, and the musical piece Going Home is surprisingly used at a lot of funerals because it's a very, very moving piece and it's a very emotional, and I just think in the topic we're talking about today, it's very appropriate.
And here it is on Spotlight on Alive 90.5.
Alive 90.5.
It's 21 minutes past 11, Alive 90.5 Spotlight with Jim Darren.
We're very fortunate to have in the studios today Dr. Philip Lee, an advocate and a very wonderful person, just speaking to him through the break, looking at the whole area and world of palliative care. We've asked Dr. Lee to talk to and have a really warm conversation with people that have been involved in this process, and it's very moving, listeners, to hear the stories of people and how through the great love of vocation and the great love of people that people are able to build confidence. Dr. Lee, would you take us through with one of your guests now, please?
I'd like to welcome Amal Etri, whose mother was cared for in the palliative care unit. It was an amazing experience for the whole team to care for Amal's mother, but also to work with the family to ensure that the goals of care were met. Thank you very much for joining us, Amal. Would you just be able to describe your memories of your mother's admission to the palliative care unit and what happened from there?
Sure. Thanks for having me. In terms of our family's experience, it was quite a sudden and unexpected admission for Mum into Westmead Palliative Care Unit just over 4 years ago, in March 2016. It was due to a build-up of fluid in her abdomen following some treatment or care she'd been receiving for a pancreatic cancer diagnosis almost 2 years prior. And so really the family was unprepared for that admission, and it was quite traumatic, you could say, for, you know, given Mum's amazing strength throughout that entire period and her capacity and determination to live as normal a life as possible throughout that diagnosis. And that's what triggered, I guess, the intervention following admission.
One of the things that I like to do when I meet a patient is to find out what they know. And your mum didn't speak very good English, and you were helping me to communicate with her. And I asked if you would like an interpreter, and you actually said, no, we would like the family to be able to have that message with her. When I asked what do you understand about your mum's illness, it appeared that you weren't entirely sure where things were up to. Can you just reflect on that sort of conversation and how it may have helped with your mum's care?
Yes, that's correct. Circumstances were quite complex in terms of the deterioration of her condition and where things might go in terms of her capacity to continue living at home, surrounded by family, and doing the things that was most important to her as a wife and mum. And so to have that almost collaborative and partnership approach with her treating team was something that we considered to be extremely important, especially as her condition was changed almost at times hour by hour and required interventions accordingly to treat symptoms that were appearing and quite complex symptoms at that. And so to have Dr. Lee, yourself and your team involved in that, in those discussions, and being able to listen very carefully to the concerns of our family, where we were playing almost an intermediary role on behalf of Mum, who had quite clear expectations in terms of meeting some of her life goals, even at that stage of the journey, was so helpful, and an experience that, you know, in the 2 years prior we'd not actually encountered in the medical system. And it came down to some incredibly fundamental and specialized skill set, I think, that we were able to observe in Dr. Lee and the team that were unique to the needs of patients who are in that end-of-life setting, and helped us make decisions with and on behalf of Mum in a really confident way, and ultimately helped Mum achieve those goals which she was desperate, you know, to reach.
And Amal, could you just, on that point, when you and the family understood that there wasn't much time left for your mum, where you asked the question, what's important to your mum, can you just describe what you as a family managed to achieve to meet her goals?
Sure. It's interesting that you asked that question. In terms of, you know, the community perceptions of what palliative care might entail, and I know this was the experience for Mum upon her initial admission, because we saw it written up on the patient board as a singular goal of what the admitting practitioners and nursing staff had expected, would be that it was centred around pain management. Whereas for Mum, she had a whole list of goals that she had expected to achieve prior to that deterioration in her condition. And one of those goals was, well, it actually involved travel overseas to undertake a pilgrimage to Mecca in Saudi Arabia. And the time was fast approaching, for that travel date. And so the decision making that was required in those critical days leading up to travel could not have undertaken had we not adopted that collaborative and partnership approach with you, Dr. Lee, and your team. What it enabled us to do was to explain quite clearly mum's wishes on her behalf, and at times she was pretty direct with the team as well. And through Dr. Lee's and the team, actually, kinds of acts of kindness and intervention, a most suitable intervention for mum's particular situation and the symptoms that she was experiencing, and providing the relevant advice and medical documentation to facilitate mum's travel, is actually what ended up enabling her to fulfill that goal. And she was able to get on that plane and to arrive in Saudi Arabia and fulfill her goal of reaching Mecca for the pilgrimage. And that was an absolutely incredible once-in-a-lifetime experience for us. And it was such an incredibly positive outcome and end to mum's life, and one that she was desperate to achieve. And because of the specialised and tailored approach to the care that mum received in the palliative care unit at Westmead, we were able to support her through that process.
And I think
it was quite an intensive level of engagement and consultation with the team that's required.
And I think what you highlight there is not only that it met your mother's goals, but it, in your devastating loss of your mum, it's actually a very positive thing that you're able to meet her needs. And the other side of it is that when we as a team heard what you achieved with your mum, it is a really positive effect on the team, because palliative care is a difficult area to work in, and seeing an outcome like that gives us all the incentive to keep working hard at what we do. So thank you so much for relaying that story and contributing today, Amal.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thank you very much, Amal, for being on Spotlight this morning discussing palliative care. It's time
for
a break.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much, and have a great morning.
Alive 90.5.
25 minutes to 12, Alive 90.5 Spotlight with Jim Darren.
Very fortunate to have in our studios today Dr. Philip Lee, a renowned doctor who is retired, has a great personal and professional concern for the whole area of palliative care. And we just listened to a very moving and a very heartfelt story from Amal about her relationship with her mother and her goals at that very difficult stage of people's lives, and being able to help them through that journey. I'm really delighted now that you're going to speak to another colleague and friend who's been through that journey. So thanks, Dr. Phil.
Thanks, Jim. I'd just like to welcome Hans Zollner, who whose wife died several years ago, and we helped to care for her in the palliative care ward. Welcome, Hans, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks very much, Phil.
Hans, could you just briefly describe how Helen ended up in the palliative care unit at Westmead, what her condition was, and what the challenges were for you caring for her at home?
Right. Helen. Helen was 49 when she fell ill. She had, she had sort of surprising and inexplicable symptoms of gastric reflux and weight loss, and it took really a month or so to nail down that she was actually had very advanced cancer. She had bowel cancer, and at diagnosis, it had spread to her liver. And her liver was just full of these metastases, of these masses of cancer, and that's what was causing all the problems for her. And at the time we were pretty shocked, and she developed quite intense pain very quickly. We literally just got the diagnosis on a Wednesday, and we had the kids over on the Friday evening to explain what was happening. And in the middle of telling them about you know, the diagnosis, we'd been told, look, it could just be months. We hadn't had a chance to see an oncologist yet. It was all just very new, and bang, suddenly there was this shocking immediate bout of pain, and by coincidence and by good fortune, I worked together with Phil's wife, and I knew that Phil was a palliative care specialist. I was able to call him up and say, look, we're in this terrible situation. Helen's in shocking pain. It's just out of the blue. And luckily, you know, with the expertise, we're able to get very rapid pain control. And that was sort of the start of our journey into palliative care. And Helen received chemotherapy every 2 weeks. We were able to, you know, we were sent by the oncology team out at Westmead, and together with the palliative care team, she was received chemotherapy every 2 weeks, and that had the effect of knocking the cancer back. We knew it was a hopeless situation in terms of survival long term, but.
So, Hans, just to interrupt there for a moment, that's a really good... We were talking earlier, before you came on, about the supportive care model of palliative care, and that's a really good example of how the two teams work together to try and attack the cancer with the chemotherapy, and the palliative care team supporting the patient through that journey to help manage the pain.
Oh, it made all the difference to us, Phil, honestly, because, the chemotherapy has... As everyone knows, is pretty terrible. But to be able to control the nausea and all the other side effects and problems that emerge with the chemotherapy and the cancer together, we were very grateful that the worst of the pain, the worst of the nausea, the worst of all the problems that are inherent in the treatment and the disease were controlled. With sort of ongoing palliative care together with the chemotherapy. And really, that gave us... I mean, it was a horrible situation, but at the time, we were very aware of the value of whatever time we had to be together. And that gave us one last wonderful year. It really did. It was one last wonderful year to just be together and love each other. And we'll always be grateful for that. Well, I am, and I know Helen was too.
Now, when moving along towards the end of Helen's life, and that required her to be admitted to the palliative care ward, what were the circumstances there that meant that you couldn't continue caring for her at home, and she needed experts, both nursing and medical, to look after her in those final days and weeks?
Yeah, well, she had she went into the palliative care on two separate occasions. One occasion, she developed a bowel obstruction, which required treatment, and she was hospitalised for that for about 3 days. That was it was really wonderful to have, obviously, the expertise of the palliative care team there to help her look after it, but also the full expertise and power of a major teaching hospital there as well. You know, she needed a gastroenterologist, she needed an anaesthetist, there was a surgeon involved, together with the palliative care team to sort out her problems. And that then addressed one acute episode, but with the nature of her disease was that she suffered quite significant liver failure, and that was ongoing. One of the effects of that was that there's a lot of buildup of fluid in the abdomen. There's sort of a lot of body fluid just accumulates in the abdominal cavity. And that had to be drained every week or two because the pressure was just too great on the other organs. And so that would be periodically drained. And after one particular draining, or really after the last drainage that she had, what happened was that the site where the drainage was formed just didn't stop bleeding. And that was really just a manifestation also of the liver failure, because all these clotting factors are made in the liver, and the liver just wasn't able to do its job anymore. So she had really uncontrollable bleeding that just kept going on and on. I took her home and tried to sort of stop it there, and it just wouldn't stop. And that's when we went to hospital. We went to, in the first instance, a private hospital close to where we lived. And she was hospitalised there overnight, and eventually the bleeding was controlled. But they realised pretty quickly that really she was, too ill for them to handle. They simply couldn't properly care for her, and it was also very clear that she was getting more ill and that it was possibly coming to the end of her disease.
So what you've highlighted there, Hans, is the particular skills that are within Westmead Hospital, where there's the access to the other disciplines. You mentioned the anaesthetist, the gastroenterologist, etc., but also the highly skilled nursing staff to care for someone who is as complex as Helen, that doesn't exist in other hospitals for the very complex, unique patients such as Helen was.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, the private hospitals, they're geared to do things that are predictable and profitable, but things that are complex and unpredictable, they can't deal with it. They're just not made to do it. They don't have the capacity to cope with that. So she was bundled into an ambulance and taken to Westmead Hospital, where she went straight into the palliative care ward, and where it was very important to have, you know, a quiet place, a quiet single room. Everything was set up there so that we could care for her, and help, where the family could provide her with emotional support, and also where honestly we also had a degree of emotional support also from the expert team there, and where the burden of dealing with nursing and helping just all the mechanics of nursing, that was really the expert team's job. And being there, I'm quite certain that Helen had the best possible death. She didn't die in agony. She didn't struggle and suffer, because everything was laid on. The facilities were there, the suction was there, the bed could be adjusted when she started choking on her fluids, and she could be made comfortable to the very last breath. And that the importance of that just can't be overstated. There's no decency and no dignity, but it's also a ghastly thing to let somebody into eternity in agony. You wouldn't let someone's tooth be extracted without anaesthetic. But why would you let people die and enter eternity, the ultimate blackness, suffering unnecessarily, when the expertise and the skill is available? It should simply be available to help patients to get through that terrible last moment, and to help the family to get through it too, because another family member of mine died at home without all those advantages, without the support of palliative care, and it was the most terrible death for them and the most terrible experience for the family, for his wife, for his son, to not knowing how to help him, not knowing what to do, not having the skills, the drugs, the facilities, nothing, and trying to nurse this poor fellow in his last gasping, struggling, coughing, suffocating breaths, a total nightmare. And I compare that experience with really the dignified and humane experience that Helen had and that we had, and I there's just no doubt in my mind that you need to have proper palliative care wards in every major hospital. No one should have to.
Well, thank you so much for that, Hans. Really appreciate your input and your reflection on Helen's experience. Thank you.
No, not at all. Thank you.
Thank you. We're just going to take a short break and talk more with Dr. Philip Lee on palliative care at Westmead. You're listening to Spotlight on Alive 90.5. 90.5. It's 8 minutes to 12, Alive 90.5 Spotlight with Jim and Darren.
For about the last 40-odd minutes, we've been speaking and had an amazing journey in our own personal worlds about the whole concept of palliative care with Dr. Phil Lee. We've spoken to past friends, or current friends, I should say, of Phillips, and people who have had to go through this journey in family. It's been absolutely amazing, Phil, how you've taken us on this journey. Coming back now and looking at the whole area of palliative care, what's your world look like going forward in terms of what would you like to see? Because it really is being challenged with resources.
From the discussion that Hans and Amal contributed to, I think it's really important that everyone understands that the palliative care team wants to look after patients where they want to be looked after. The amount of resources being put into community palliative care, that is looking after palliative care patients at home, has really expanded thanks to the New South Wales Health. And the majority of patients, if they wish to be cared for at home, can manage that now. There's another group of patients who may not have the family support to be cared for at home, or whose condition may be a little bit too complicated, and St Joseph's Hospital at Auburn Palliative Care Unit and the Mount Druitt Palliative Care Unit provide amazing care for that group of patients. The third group are those with really complex needs, and Hans described his wife's complex needs. And there's a group of patients who need to be admitted to a dedicated palliative care ward at Westmead Hospital, where the team can access the experts within that hospital, such as the gastroenterologist, the anaesthetist, the cancer specialist, the radiotherapy specialist, the surgeons. Not necessarily to cure the patient, which is probably not going to happen, but to prolong their life with quality. The sad thing is that a decision has been made to close the dedicated palliative care ward at Westmead Hospital. This happened 2 years ago. And while palliative care patients can be admitted to Westmead Hospital, they're scattered throughout the hospital, hopefully mostly in the oncology ward, but they're not now looked after by a specialist palliative care nurse. And certain palliative care advocates such as myself and others within the area have been reassured ever since the dedicated ward was closed in 2009 that a new dedicated palliative care ward would be established. The new acute services building, which is soon to open, we knew that that was not the place for a palliative care ward, but the hope and the assurances were that when services decanted from the old building to the new acute services building, space would be available. What has prompted a movement to try to re-establish the ward is that a group of advocates were told by the executive at the hospital that Westmead Hospital does not need a palliative care unit, and that there were now no plans to re-establish a palliative care unit at Westmead Hospital. And this is clearly unacceptable from patient-centred care and for our community. The funding is at the moment that there are 7 beds that are still nominally called palliative care. And a simple measure would be to re-establish those 7 beds on the oncology ward as dedicated palliative care beds and to then recruit appropriately skilled palliative care nurses. Following a period of time, that service could be evaluated, and if it showed that the care was appropriate, then there would be a very good case for building a dedicated palliative care ward. And that's what we're trying to work towards.
Dr. Phil, would you please come back again and continue to tell the story and see how we can get that story out and make sure that people hear this story and become part of the solution, not the problem, in trying to help people in their lives. Thanks to you and James Butler and many, many others. You have done an amazing job, and we thank you, both Darren and I, 90.5 and Spotlight, for joining us this morning and continuing with the journey of helping others in our community. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jim and Darren. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Phil. And that's Spotlight. Stay tuned for Rage on Radio with Lunchtime Special.
Alive 90.5.